Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. You think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers. That they probably will never, ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk, and welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. We're extremely thankful that you guys could join us again for another week, for another episode. We've had a great time. It's Halloween season so far. Last week we had super scary, creepy story time, part one. And today we're going to be following that up with super scary, creepy story time. That's really hard to say. That's hard to keep saying. We're going to be sharing creepy stories again for a second straight week, leading up to Appalachian Intelligence's Halloween, where we'll be dropping a Halloween finale episode on Halloween that hopefully will creep some of you guys out and maybe open your minds up to something that I didn't know about until just a few weeks ago. But before we get into the actual episode here, we love to shout you guys that leave 5-star reviews out. When we get love, we like to show love. So one of our latest ones comes from Darf Vapor, which I really like the name. It says, I found my people. I found you guys from the Hollow Sky podcast. I can really relate with you guys. I'm also from the Appalachian Mountains. So, Darf Vapor, fellow Appalachian Hill folk, thank you very much for that 5-star review. We appreciate it. All the listeners, all the Hill folk out there that have sent in messages, left reviews, emails, contributed in all kinds of different ways over the last few weeks. We really, really appreciate all of you. We appreciate you for listening. We appreciate you for sharing the show. We appreciate you all the way around. With you today, I guess I left that part out, your hosts, as always, Justin, Ryan, and Lance. And big announcement. Drum roll, please. Lance just so happens to be wearing the first Appalachian Intelligence Hill Folk t-shirt to model for you guys today. So Lance, give us a little twirl. Give us a little twirl. Show the folks what we're working with.
I can do this or not. They also can see what I'm working with. Say, hey.
Hey. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Dip it slow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The logo on the back, baby. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, we have t-shirts now for the three of us. If there's any interest out there, any of you Hill folk want to purchase a Appalachian Intelligence Hill folk member t-shirt, let us know. And we'll work something out with it. We'll get them made. We'll get them shipped out. We'll let you know how much. I don't even know what we're going to charge. I guess we have to see if the interest is there first. So
if nothing else, we got t-shirts out of it.
Well, yeah. If nothing else, we have t-shirts.
That's really all that matters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like we say all the time, if nobody else is listening to this show, we're still going to be doing it. So that's just the way that it is. But we'll, anything else we need to talk about, fellas, before we dive in here?
Not that I can think of.
No.
Y'all good tonight? Y'all are looking good.
I'm feeling good.
Of course.
Get the Heel Folk t-shirt on.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
No.
Well.
Time to pick the font out, this Heel Folk. You would be surprised the iterations that you could find on how you wanted things to look. I think it turned out okay.
Oh, yeah. It looks great. Looks great. I love it. I do. I love it.
I'm glad.
Because I'm going to be wearing it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, Halloween season is upon us, boys. It's super scary, creepy story time. Part two, Wait a minute. I was supposed to echo the story time part. Let's just dive right in it. We'll jump into the stories. Ryan, I think you're up to bat. So,
I got two stories for you. One of them does have an update that came in just a few hours ago.
Whoa.
So,
this is what we like to hear.
This is hot off the press.
Breaking news.
See, it just so happened. I had liked that story, you know, and then I was scrolling through, and then I get a notification. Click on it, and it was the update, and that story was from a few days ago. So we got lucky. Just so happened they updated it right before the show on the story I chose. It was fake. So the first one, though, is called Unexplained Knocking from a Locked Morgue. Says this was a few hours ago. This one came in also, so I chose it over another one I was going to pick because I like this one more. I even commented on it, and that's gotten some press on what I commented. I'll let you know what that is after. So it starts off, okay, so this just happened to me a few hours ago in the middle of the day, and I'm really freaked out. I work in a retirement home, and my job often requires me to go to the basement with a cart full of dirty laundry. That means I have to use the elevator. I've done this 1,000 times already, and never, ever did I hear or see anything unusual. Now, since I work in a retirement home, amongst a lot of other rooms in the basement, there is also a temporary morgue, which is located opposite of the elevator entrance. This morgue was probably used at some point in time, but as long as I've been working there, it was never even unlocked. Nobody used that room for anything. Today, I was working as normal, going about my day, not feeling creeped out at all since it was the middle of the day. And I've been to this basement too many times already and never had the reason to be scared of it. I went down to the basement, emptied the dirty laundry in the laundry room, and called the elevator down again since somebody had used it. I pressed the button, but the elevator wasn't coming down. Above me, through the closed elevator doors, I could hear two of my coworkers speaking and holding the elevator from closing. The space in the elevator is very acoustic. You can easily hear people on it from the basement all the way up to the third floor. At this point, I was getting a little pissed off because it was a particularly busy day and I didn't have any time to spare, so I started knocking on the elevator doors to let them know I was waiting for it. After a few knocks, it seemed to me they didn't even register as it is someone knocking for them to get off the elevator, so I decided to knock a little melody rhythm to get their attention. Now, this is where something very fucking weird happened. Maybe 5 seconds after the knock, I start hearing knocking back. It didn't have any particular pattern, and it sounded like literal knocking on a door. I first thought it was coming from my coworkers above, but quickly realized it was coming from behind me. I turned around to find the basement completely empty, and I couldn't quite figure out where it was coming from at first until I came a few feet closer to the sound. It was coming from the fucking morgue. I froze. Thousand thoughts came rushing through my mind as I tried to somehow rationalize what I was hearing. I wanted to leave the cart behind and just sprint up the stairs to get GTFO. And when I heard the elevator finally coming down, it was the longest wait ever, but I finally got on and pressed the button to the third floor, I think 20 times before the doors closed and got me out of there. Maybe all this can be very easily explained away with it being an older building, sounds from the pipes or animals, etc., and being a pure coincidence with my knocking, but I never heard a building ever make a knocking sound on the door like that. Needless to say, it really creeped me out. So that one, excuse me, I went down and commented with, you know, my little sarcastic ass. I was like, well, maybe you work with a serial killer and they know that room's never used and it's always locked, so that'd be like the perfect place to stash their victims. You could have saved a life.
Yeah, that's gosh, that is terrifying though. I mean, could you imagine being in that situation, like hearing this knocking and not knowing where it's coming from and trying to find it, and then all of a sudden realization hits and you're like, oh, wait a minute. It's coming from the morgue.
And that was also from the paranormal subreddit put up there by HomesickAlien77.
I got a follow-up to that. My grandfather worked in a hospital in Columbus when he was a young man as an orderly, just on the side to make a little extra money. One of his jobs that he had to do was he would take the patients who had deceased and he would take them down the elevator to the morgue. Well, he told us the story that one night, it's an older gentleman that passed away. He'd done the whole CPR, not old nine, trying to revive him. You know, unfortunately, the man passed away. They had, I guess, death certificate, all the things that needed to take place, an hour or so probably. And it was his job to take the body down to the morgue. So he came in as the orderly with the white sheet over the hospital bed. Because we're talking 1950, right? So white sheet over into the hospital bed, wheeled the hospital bed into the elevator, pushes the ground floor button, whatever that would have been for the morgue, starts to descend, and it's about halfway. The elevator kind of shakes a little bit because it's an old kind of rickety elevator. And the guy that had passed away, set right up in the hospital bed.
Holy.
He totally panicked. Realized rigor mortis had set in.
Oh.
When the rigor mortis set in, the muscles seen, hey, you know, the muscles seized it, but it absolutely scared him to death. And it would. You can imagine, you see, you know, all of a sudden he sits straight up.
Oof. That would be he's terrible.
The story is. Oh, freaked him out pretty good there for a few seconds. Well, yeah, of course it did.
Well, yeah. I mean, could you imagine?
Crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Shoot. That's nuts. No, that's a creepy story. Both of those are creepy stories, even if there's an explanation for sure to one and possibly an explanation for the other one. Ryan may have solved it. May just be a serial killer.
It just, I mean, that's where I put him. Nobody went down there.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially if I was, you know, in the higher ups of that facility and had the power to keep people out of some place. That's who I'd be looking at. If you ever hear this podcast, I hope I save your life.
Or you have, if Ryan becomes a higher up in some kind of hospital setting, you know exactly what he's going to be thinking.
You know why.
You know why.
Is that you, Dexter?
Silly. Oh, man. So, all right. My next story, paranormal subreddit. This one comes from Redditor IDFK and a bunch of numbers. So, you don't fucking know and a bunch of numbers. This is okay. So my cat chased an entity down the hall tonight. Experience. This just happened like 2 hours ago, and honestly, I'm still kind of shaken up. My apartment is kind of notorious for the spooks. You know, things moving, doors opening or closing, the usual. We also have a mimic that likes to pretend to be my kid or my little niece, calling or crying for me. There was one day with a lot of mimicking that I ended up with a couple of little scratches on my collarbone out of nowhere. I was just sitting at the dining room table. But I digress. Things have been quiet. I mean, today I've seen some shadowy, out of the corner of my eye kind of things, but nothing crazy. Tonight, my cat comes tearing down the hallway like speeding and skids across the back of the couch. Now, this is a big old lazy Maine Coon, so already him running was disconcerting. But as soon as he skidded across the back of the couch that I was standing facing, I feel this aggressive touch on my back and the entire length of my rib cage on my left side. Not like scratches, but like someone digging their fingers in and dragging them down. No one was in the room with me. In fact, I had to go hunt my cousin down because I was so freaked out. Now, over 2 hours later, it feels like the muscle in that part of my back is burning. It doesn't hurt exactly. It's just uncomfortable. So, let's see. There's the... No. Let me go back. So, this is the... That was posted 10 days ago. And then today, you know, I was going through those stories. I chose that one. And then this update comes in on it. So it says, update. Things have been insanely active since I posted last week. I wish I was making this up. I'm kind of at a loss. But if anyone knows any good paranormal groups that aren't insanely expensive and are legit in SoCal, my inbox is open. It's all been focused on my cousin's room, which is the back room at the end of the hall where my cat ran from. The other day, I was doing the dishes, and I heard my cousin's oldest daughter scream crying loudly. I rushed back into her parents' room where she was napping on their bed, and she was out like a light. It wasn't her, and we were the only ones home. Later that day, I'm making my cousin and her husband's bed and, like, billow the sheet up to smooth it out, walk to the other side of the king-size bed, and it's still puffed up. The sheet settled down slowly like something was crawling across it. And it settled in a weird pattern that I took a picture of. I don't know if it means anything, but I can share it if anyone is interested. Yesterday, my cousin's youngest, who is 4, was playing in her toy area in the bedroom and her dad is sitting on the bed. Suddenly, she goes, "Hey, who threw that?" And ask her dad if he threw a marker at her because it went whoosh and hit her. He did not throw it and was the only one in the room with her. I don't know if that freaked him out so much that led to his dream, but last night he dreamt that she was playing in the room while he sat on the bed and he watched a shadow dart from the end of the bed and snatch her up. He played tug of war with the entity over her until my cousin woke him up because he was thrashing and freaking out.
Holy crap.
What?
Dude, I don't like that whole mimicking thing.
I don't like that whole mimicking thing.
Cool it, sorry.
I'll punch you right in the face. Been teaching high school way too long. No, really, I don't like the thought of that. And well, I don't like the thought of that more because of a couple things that have happened to me recently that I haven't even talked about on here. But I just, that creeps me out, dude, that something has the ability to mimic the people around you, the people that you love, the people that you trust, to try to pull you or persuade you to come to them. Like, I don't like that. Like, two of the things that creep me out the absolute most are these mimic encounters and doppelgangers. And it's just because, like, if it's bad, I should be able to know that it's bad. Like, I shouldn't think that it's, you know, my wife or my kid or my buddy or something, you know, hollering at me from the woods or somewhere else in the house, or me seeing that. I just, I don't know, dude. That gives me the willies. I don't like it.
I don't think I would care for that.
No. I am out.
Yeah, that's why I chose that story. And then I was just super lucky to get that update to that story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because the update was creepy as shit.
Yeah, dude, the sheet. Like, folding the sheet across the bed. And it not flattening out. Like, God.
You imagine?
That is not appetizing at all.
No.
That is not attractive in the least.
No.
Whew. Good job, Brian. Good job. That and the whole dream thing, man, that's another aspect that I've been hearing a whole lot more and more and more. Like, when stuff is going on, it's like people can't catch a break from it. It's like all this activity is happening during the day, but then they go to sleep at night too, and the nightmares are, you know, that they're worse.
It's a spillover into your subconscious.
Well, I mean, I guess. Or if it's like Doctor Strange and dreams are just an alternate you in a different reality, maybe that's something plaguing you there too.
Listen, Nolan had it 10 years ago when he pumped out Inception. You think about the stuff that we've seen now since that movie came out, and whenever 2010, whenever it was, I don't remember. But the concept of that, when you watch, you're like, holy crap, this is really cool. Like, this is a really neat concept. Think about Christopher Nolan, super intelligent, always given the fringy things of the war universe of bring it to light in cinematic masterpieces.
Oh, yeah.
And you think just since Inception, and then all of the other media or other things we have watched, how that is like kind of just built on the concept of different realities based on where your mind is consciously, either if you're asleep or not asleep, or if you're dreaming, or if you're in a, with some kind of coma or something. We've heard all these different things that have happened to people who have had realities essentially take place, right? And you think about things we saw in Stranger Things. You think about the movie of Doctor Strange and how it treated dreams, and just all these things that have kind of just kept building since. So before that moment, before Nolan and Inception, I knew what lucid dreaming was and understood that, but like, to build realities on dreams and then have dreams within dreams, which you built different realities and then timelines were interchangeable. And it's just like, it makes a lot of sense. Like, people can live lifetimes a lot of times in these states and don't really realize, and it's just, but, and then in the actual reality their body's living in, it's but a moment. It's kind of crazy to think if you start applying that same logic to alternate dimensions or portals or whatever else you want to kind of apply that to, like, you get into the subconscious of your mind. A lot of, for the most part, pretty much unnavigated territory, right? I mean, we don't really know much. We don't really know how it works. We don't really know, like, all the stuff that could possibly go on in there. It's like the human brain is the one thing that's pretty much unpredictable. It's kind of crazy to think about how What at one point in our lifetime seemed like a total fantasy has slowly became very much a reality in a lot of ways, which may be the scariest part of all.
Yeah, so much of a reality that a lot of physicists and scientists out there, you know, like big names, not only say that, you know, these alternate timelines or, you know, these different dimensions or whatever aren't just a possibility, they're a probability. Like, it's crazy to think about, man. You know, just like you said, you know, when Christopher Nolan came out with Inception, that was something that was totally, you know, oh, this is science fiction. I mean, it's good, it's interesting, but there's no way. And then the more time goes on, but we talk about it, man. We talk about it on here all the time. It's Hollywood. They got to show you. They got to show you before it actually comes out. But it is interesting. It's really interesting. It's crazy to think about. I think we could probably do every episode just based on alternate timelines and different dimensions, multiple dimensions. It's crazy. The multiverse.
Well, fellas, I hope I didn't take too long on my stories there.
It's way too long. It was a snooze fest.
No, actually, Lance took way longer talking about Christopher Nolan and Inception and different dimensions.
Sorry, I'm a huge Nolan fan. Sorry. Oh, I apologize.
Hey, look, that's the best Batman trilogy ever, okay? Best ever.
Agreed. Cosign.
Christian Bale. Although he literally is psychotic, made the best Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm going to read my whole next story like I'm Batman.
No, do it in your other voice.
Oh, I can't. No, I ain't doing it. I'm not doing that with two episodes in a row. We're going to start losing listeners real quick.
It gets a pop out of me every time.
All right. So I'm going to dive in and tell a story about something that surprisingly, amazingly, we haven't even talked about on this show yet. And you would think at this point we would have at least mentioned it, but I can't think of a time that we've even mentioned these little buggers. But I'm going to tell a story about black-eyed kids. I know if you're listening to this show and into the spooky, you've probably heard of black-eyed kids, but surprisingly, a lot of people still haven't. And I know that for sure because I was talking to my daughter, my oldest daughter, about them just right before we started recording. And she had no idea what I was talking about. And she said, "Hey, Siri, what are," I said, "You're not going to sleep tonight." She said, "Never mind." So we're going to talk about a black-eyed kids encounter. But at first, for those of you out there that may not know what the black-eyed children, black-eyed kids, whatever you want to call them, may not know what they are, I found a website. It's called thoughtcatalog.com.
Very reputable, very, very respectable website.
Absolutely. Every website that I use is very respectable.
Totally respectable.
This is not Wikipedia, okay? I go to the source.
That's right.
But on this website, this writer or the whatever you want to call it, blogger, writer, journalist, whatever, they actually pulled some stories from Reddit. So it's literally the same thing that we're doing right now during Halloween season and super scary, creepy story time. But she also was kind enough to share 10 facts about the black-eyed kids. So
let's get it started.
Poor joke. Black-eyed kids, not black-eyed peas, Lance. We ain't talking about Will I Am and Fergie here. Okay. That's the only two I remember.
What was the other one's name?
I don't know. Nobody cares.
I don't remember.
They didn't do anything else.
But Ryan knows. Nope, he doesn't.
And the beast keeps running, running, and running, running, and running.
Running, running, and running.
All right. That was a okay. Black-eyed kids will look like normal human children between the ages of 6 and 16, but with pale skin and completely black eyes. Additionally, people who have been in close proximity to black-eyed kids report a feeling of unease that washed over them. While nothing about the children's appearance, aside from the eyes, genuinely frightened the people, they still reported feelings ranging from anxiety to terror at their presence. Some people have also reported seeing black-eyed kids that have talons or feet or other demonic attributes, but most sightings are of seemingly normal children. Black-eyed kids are also commonly described as wearing dated clothing or dressing in a manner that is not typical of a normal child of their age. Black-eyed children always ask for something. It is always something that involves being in close quarters with you. They will ask for a ride in your vehicle or to enter your home to use the phone. There are no reported stories of what I like this one. There are no reported stories of what happens when you let a black-eyed kid into your vehicle or home. All stories come from people whose eerie feelings made them flee from the children. And I like that one because, of course, there's no reported stories of the people that let these things in because they're no longer with us. Justin's opinion. Okay. That's Justin speaking. The earliest sighting of a black-eyed kid that is documented was by journalist Brian Bethel in 1996. The story has been added to the internet, creepypasta lore, but to this day, Bethel insists the incident was real and happened the way he reported. In 2014, a British paper reported that sightings of black-eyed kids around the world are rising. I don't know where their stats are coming from, but we'll go with that. Theories about the black-eyed kids are that they are vampires, aliens, or of demonic origin. All right. So before we get into this story, and it's a pretty good one, you guys have heard of the black-eyed kids. What do y'all think they are?
I don't know, but I don't like them.
I think it's crazy that it's such a recent thing.
Yeah, I do too.
That's what, like, to me, like, this creepy, so much creepypasta stuff. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, this is cool. This is fun to think about, right? This is fun. But there's been, this is such a recent thing that, I don't know, it just seems like not just something that was posted on the internet that went viral and people were just kind of coming up with stuff.
Like, but
it also could be because it also very much sounds like the Slender Man as far as just the recency of it showing up on the internet and then it kind of catching fire. And then having all of the stuff, you know, eventually led to those teenage or preteen girls, teenage girls, whatever it was, killing their friend or whatever exactly the case was, what that was. But it also kind of lends the same ear to that as well.
Yeah, they killed their friend and said that Slender Man was, they were pretty much sacrificing her to Slender Man. Like, he was telling them that they had to commit murder and to kill this specific girl. It's weird. It's freaky. But there's something that I've been thinking about with some of this stuff too. Now, I haven't done the research into it yet. I would like to do a full episode on the black-eyed children in the future because I would like to go back and see if maybe there are other reports and other cases from different civilizations, you know, throughout history of something similar. Okay. Because here's the thing. The first major reported sighting was 1996. Okay. The internet didn't really become prominent. What, for another 10 years after that? I mean, it was around, but I'm talking like, you know, stuff going viral, you know, with social media.
I liken the exploding of the internet with the beginning of Facebook.
Yeah.
Which was deceased. I mean, we had, you know, MySpace and LiveJournal and E-Bombs World and stuff that we watched videos on back in the day. That's right. I gave you an E-Bombs World. I brought that in 2004. Yeah. But it's like stuff really didn't hit viral until Facebook kind of got to be a big thing. And that would have been what? It was 2007, 2008?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thing. Like, you know, what if this is something that there have been reports of or something similar to these things, but the internet just wasn't around to have a vast collection of where you can just pull all these accounts, you know, just like that. I mean, that's my thinking on it too. Like, now I know it, to me, it's a little different than the whole Slender Man thing, because we know for sure that Slender Man started out as a creepypasta, started out as a story that somehow manifested into reality. But with these things, I feel like there probably is some historical reference to these things or something similar. I don't know. That's just my thinking. Only it didn't take off until the rise of the internet. I'll get into the story. It had been a slow trick-or-treat night in our neighborhood that evening, which is pretty odd in itself. We usually have kids from different areas dropped off in hours and have a constant parade at our door. That night, I'd say we'd had no more than 8 or 10 groups of kids come by the entire night. It was about 9:30 p.m., and my husband and I were sitting in our family room watching some of those ghost shows based on supposedly actual events. Like I said, I don't believe in that stuff, but I do like a good ghost story now and then, and it was Halloween and all. We hadn't had any activity at the door in over half an hour, and it was getting late, so we decided to turn the porch light off and let our dog Chloe out of her crate. Chloe is an American bulldog and is very docile. We only put her in her crate because we were afraid she'd try and get out to play with all the kids, and I didn't want to have to chase her down the street. Also, we didn't want her to scare any of the kids because she would look a little intimidating to the younger kids. So I turned the outside light off, let Chloe out, and she followed me back to the couch and lay down at my feet. It was getting close to 10 p.m. when my husband decided he'd had enough fun for the night and was going to go upstairs, take a shower, and get ready for bed. After all, it was Thursday, and he still had to get up early the next day. My teenage son was out with his friends at a local haunted house and wasn't expected back for another hour or so, so that left me alone on the couch with Chloe. Now, just because I don't believe doesn't mean those shows don't freak me out a bit. And being alone, now watching, I'd have to say I was kind of on edge, as it were. It wasn't long after I heard the upstairs water for the shower turn on when there came a light knock, knock, knock at the front door. My initial reaction was, what the hell, really? It's almost 10 o'clock. Go home. But soon, an uneasy feeling came over me. Why the knock? Our doorbell glows, and in the dark and without the porch light, it would be extra obvious to anyone there. I paused. I couldn't really just ignore it. Our front door has a big beveled glass panel, and anybody right at the door could see in enough to see someone was in the family room watching TV. It would be pretty rude for me to just sit there and not answer. Knock, 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 again from the door. I glanced down at Chloe, and she was gone. My gaze followed her usual path to the front door, expecting her to be on her way there as she normally does. Nothing. She wasn't there. I stood up to look around the room better and found her, crouching by the back door like she was wanting out. However, she never asked to go out like that. She always comes and licks my hand or puts her head on my knee. This was totally out of character for her, and I have to say, heightened my anxiety. Chloe, crate. I said. She just turned back to look at me like, hell no, lady, I ain't moving. I yelled up to my husband, but if he was already in the shower, I knew there was no chance of him hearing me. Knock, knock, knock. About that time, a car drove down our street and cast just enough light onto the door to where I could see the silhouettes of two small children through the glass. I instantly felt relief. It was just some kids, probably a couple of my neighbors on their way back home that wanted to stop by and show me their costume or something. I headed to the door and looked back to make sure Chloe wasn't going to follow. What a great watchdog, I thought to myself as she just sat there. I turned on the porch light when I got to the door, and sure enough, I could see through the glass that it was a couple of pretty small kids. A little late for such young ones, I thought, and I began to wonder about what kind of parents would let their kids run the streets that late at night. I only opened the door enough to where I could block Chloe's escape if she decided to grow some balls, which was only about 2 feet. What struck me immediately as odd was the kids weren't wearing any costumes. They were in normal street clothes. Also, no customary trick-or-treat either. I began to feel a little uneasy again. It was a girl and boy. The girl to my left was older. I'd say about 11 or 12. I could tell she was blonde, but I couldn't make out any distinct features as our lights are from high above and on columns at the front of the porch, so most of the light was coming from behind them. I had not opened the door wide enough for any light from inside to hit them directly. The boy was younger and about a foot shorter, I'd say 8 or 9 years old, and looked to have light brown hair. The girl very politely spoke up, "Ma'am, can we please come inside and use your phone to call our mom?" As she spoke, something in the pit of my stomach was telling me something was wrong. What kid, even at that age, doesn't have a cell phone of their own these days? I couldn't remember the last time I'd had anybody ask to use my home phone. "Hun, don't you have a phone of your own you can call your mom on?" I asked. This is when things really got weird. Both kids turned to look at one another like they were going to say something to one another, but neither ever spoke. They both turned back to me, and the girl said, "Ma'am, my cell phone battery doesn't have any charge left in it. Can we please come inside and call our mother? We're alone out here, and my brother's scared." I have to admit, there were two competing feelings going on inside me. The first, that of a mother's heart that wanted to help these two small children get to their mom. The other, a sinking fear in my gut that was keeping the other feeling at bay. It was then I noticed that during the short conversation, I'd already opened the door a few extra inches, which I was completely unaware of doing. I stopped. "Honey, why don't you give me your mother's number and I can call her myself?" Another pause, and they again looked at one another. After a short moment, they turned back to me and the girl said, "Ma'am, my little brother has to use your bathroom. Can we please come inside while you call our mom?" And with that last statement, the little girl moved closer toward the door like she was just going to walk on in by me. As she did, she stepped into the light coming from inside the house, and I got my first real good look at her. Solid, jet black eyes. That's all I could see. That motherly instinct was gone and replaced by terror I don't think I've ever felt in my life. I could feel every hair on my arms and back of, on the back of my neck standing at attention. I closed the door to where just my face was able to stick out. The little girl stopped and again pleaded, "Please, ma'am, we're really scared and alone out here. We have to come inside. Please help us." Then, like on cue, both kids began to whimper and cry. That's when the fear took over, and I shut and locked the door. "I'll call your mom if you give me the number," I shouted through the door, "but I'm not letting you in my house." I could still see them stand there on the porch, just staring at me through the beveled glass pane. Part of me wanted to run upstairs to my husband, but the bigger part didn't want to lose track of where they were. That would have freaked me out even more to not know where they were. After what seemed like forever, but probably only a few seconds, I decided I'd call my neighbor that lives across the street. As I made my way to the side table by our couch to my phone, I glanced at the back door. Chloe was nowhere to be found. We later found her in the guest room under the bed. When I got to my phone and started to look for his contact info, it was only then the kid stepped away from the door and began to walk to the street. As they did, I walked to the door to get a better look to see where they went, still not calling my neighbor. If you get close enough to the glass, you can see out enough to make out people's shapes, but you can't see much detail. Of course, standing that close to the door would make you pretty obvious to anyone outside looking in. From the door, I could see that the kids were still standing under the street lamp nearest my house, staring at me. As I lifted the phone to my ear after calling, only then the kids start walking down the street. I met my neighbor out under the lamp once he was out there, but the kids were nowhere to be seen. So that's that one.
No way I would have went out there.
Nope.
And that was kind of a dick move to call the neighbor to have them come out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking whenever I read it.
I'd be pissed. If the, why'd you call me out here? Oh, it's just some demon kids. As soon as I saw
black eyes, I'd be like, nope.
Yeah.
Well, there's just something. There's just something incredibly creepy about. Well, anytime you're talking about children in the paranormal realm, period. Like, kids are just creepy. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Do such weird stuff.
Dude, such like
do weird regular stuff.
Regular human, not demon, ghost, vampire kids are creepy.
Like I tell Pip all the time, she's four and she does stuff. I'm looking at my wife, I'm like, she's such a weirdo. Like she just does weird stuff. I mean, it's awesome. We love her, but she's a weirdo.
That's why we love you, Pip. That's why we love you.
She's like her daddy.
Because we're all weirdos. But no, there's just something about like, and no joke, like for most people out there, that whole thing, it may not be like that story may not have really creeped you out that much. But just the thought of just sitting around relaxing, you know, you're in your home, your safe space, your solace. And all of a sudden there's knocking at your door and there are these couple strange kids that you've never seen before that they're just not right. Like the speech isn't right. And in a lot of these cases, like you'll hear people say that their voices are almost robotic and like
also creepy.
Yeah. And they use verbiage a lot of times that doesn't match the times. Like I read a story earlier where one of these black eyed kids was asking somebody trying to get to their home if they could use their telegraph. Like what? I mean, it's just, and the way in this story that she said, my phone battery doesn't have any charge left in it. Like who says that?
Yeah.
You have some porridge, sir.
Yeah.
Please, sir. May I have some more?
Like, yeah, ma'am, my phone died. Okay. You know, I can see that. Ma'am, my cellular phone battery does not have any charge left in it. Wait, what? I read another one where one of these kids asked to see a glass of water. Can I see a glass of water? That's weird. I don't know. Like, just the verbiage is off there. And this one, what creeped me out so much was she opened the door. Like, yeah. The door is open, like 2 feet when she first starts talking to him. And in the majority of these cases that I've ever heard or read, like, it's always the communication's happening through the door. Not like, oh, first instinct, hey, it's Halloween, but these little buggers, they're tricky because they know it's Halloween night, but yep. They know that they got to wait till everybody else is gone. So, you know, the last of the trick-or-treaters come, lights go out, everybody shuts down, the neighborhood goes dark, and here these little buggers show up. Pardon me, ma'am, but, can we please use your telephone? Our mother's really worried, and we're extremely scared. Look at my poor brother. He's about to shat himself. He's so scared.
Shatting myself.
I don't like black-eyed kid stories. That's they creep me out.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. Like, there's something. Just the thought. Just the thought of, and it it goes in, like you look at folklore and mythology and all this stuff, it reminds me of what you hear when people were talking about vampires, that you have to let them in. Like they have to be invited in before, like they can't just cross the threshold. You know, they have to be invited. But if you look at demonic entities, a lot of these other, it's kind of the same thing. Like there has to be some form of invitation there, whether they trick you into it or whatever. Like they can move around, they can oppress, they can do all these different things. But in like these possession cases and stuff, a lot of times they're invited in. Like the person, when everything comes about, oh yeah, I've been playing with a Ouija board and talking to this one entity that was one of my buddies in high school that died in a car accident, and I was talking to it. Like they invite them in. They get tricked the whole time, but I don't know. That's just the weird that I don't know. That's what creeps me out about them. Like I feel like if they were extraterrestrial, they would just do whatever they wanted to do. I feel like if, I don't know. They're creepy little buggers.
Yeah, they're creepy for sure. I don't want anything to do with them.
Now, the lady does go on to say in the story, I left that part out, but the lady does go on to say that she rationalizes it and tells herself so she can sleep at night that this was Halloween night and it was a couple kids just wanting to play a prank. So they got all black contact lenses and were just acting out. But still, they were nowhere to be found, you know, just a couple minutes after, which is another crazy thing. I'm with y'all. There's no way I'm calling the neighbor up and going outside and looking for these things. And that's why I'm wondering, what's going on with the neighbor? Your husband's just upstairs in the shower.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
What's happening here?
I understand having to get up and get ready to go to work in the morning, but Monica better be coming and getting me and not going to get the neighbor to go frolicking about the neighborhood looking for two little black-eyed kids. Something's fishy.
Yeah. Won't be able to use that excuse.
But yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one, man. That's a weird one.
Yeah, for sure. That, man. Do you have another tale for us, Justin?
I do have another story that I will share really quickly. If I can get through it without coughing like crazy. I don't know what it is. I can talk for hours and I'm totally fine. As soon as I start reading out loud, these coughing fits hit me.
I was getting mush mouth there a few times. I was getting aggravated with myself.
I don't understand it.
I don't either. But the floor is yours, sir.
Okay. This is from the No Sleep subreddit, and it doesn't really open with a title. It opens with, "My girlfriend was up unusually early this morning. I wish I never found out why." It starts, it says, "I'm going to take out the trash," my girlfriend Monica announced as soon as I entered the kitchen that morning. I hadn't expected to see her up this early. Certainly not after how late she must have gotten home last night. After spending Friday nights bar hopping with friends, Monica usually slept in until lunch. "Okay, honey," I said, without particular interest. "Thanks." Grabbing the cereal box from the counter and plopping down on one of the kitchen chairs, I wondered if she had returned home earlier the previous night and I'd simply missed it. I normally woke up as soon as I heard the key turning in the lock, but perhaps that night she'd been particularly quiet, or maybe she'd stayed with one of her friends. "How was your night?" I asked as soon as I heard the front door click shut. "What time did you get home?" Silence. I raised my head from my bowl, waiting for her to emerge from around the corner, but the corridor was empty. Honey, I tried again, my voice saturated with uncertainty. Monica appeared in the doorway, her expression unreadable. She didn't look disoriented or drunk, but she didn't seem quite right either. Her hands were fidgety, and her eyes wouldn't meet mine. Monica, I grunted, trying to tame the lump in my throat. What's the matter? She took a deep breath and parted her lips as though she was going to speak, but then hunched her shoulders and shook her head. I need to take out the trash, she said. I gawked at her, dumbfounded. But you just did. She shook her head and glided towards the trash can cabinet, opening it and producing another bag from within. Then, just like the previous time, she turned on her heel and disappeared from the kitchen. Needless to say, the silent treatment was unlike Monica. Had something happened during her night out? Had I done anything to upset her? And where were all these bags coming from? As soon as I heard the front door shut, I leapt out of my seat and threw the cabinet open, expecting to, well, I'm not entirely sure what I was expecting. Either way, it was empty. What's going on? I asked when she returned 5 minutes later, the same empty look in her eyes. Do you want to talk about it? She looked dubious. Monica. Okay, she said. But first, let me take out the trash. My stomach lurched as she flung the cabinet open again, pulling out yet another garbage bag. What the hell? I began, subconsciously pinching my arm as if to ensure I wasn't dreaming. What are all these bags? But she wasn't listening, instead turning her back to me and retreating the same way she had come. A chill crawled up my spine. What the hell was going on? I could have sworn the cabinet had been empty only a few moments ago. Where had all these bags come from, and why wasn't she taking them all out at once? Shutting the front door behind me as meticulously as I could, I crept down the hallway leading to the stairwell. I needed to investigate. Monica had never willingly taken out the trash before. She said the garbage chute gave her the creeps. Our apartment was on the sixth floor, so there was no way she was going down all those flights of stairs for a single bag of garbage. The door to the garbage chute at the end of the hallway was ajar, and I could hear the faint wail of metal as it was pulled open. I swallowed, suddenly, at a loss for what to do. I mean, wouldn't it be weird if she found me just standing there? And what exactly was I planning to say? I listened in, my skin prickling in anticipation and my heart thudding in my chest. What was I getting so worked up for? It was only Monica, for God's sake. She'd probably had a falling out with one of her friends, or maybe I was snoring again and she couldn't get to sleep. I'll just go in and... But what I saw when I opened the door will remain with me for the rest of my life. Monica was sitting on the door of the chute, her legs already swallowed by the darkness within. Slowly but surely, she was edging her body into it, her palms clammy against the metallic finish. She turned her head at the sound of the door opening, and for a brief moment, her eyes lit up with recognition. Monica, I cried out, dashing towards the chute, my heart practically leaping out of my chest. What are you? But it was too late. Startled by my voice or by my presence, she let go and disappeared into the chute, a raspy wail reverberating against the steel. Thud. I wanted to scream, but it was as though I'd suddenly gone mute. Fear sizzled through me like electricity as I flew down the stairs to the manager's office. Give me the key to the trash room, I demanded breathlessly. My girlfriend is inside. He looked at me over the tops of his glasses as though questioning my state of mind. That's impossible, he retorted. I have the only key. Tears were flowing freely down my cheeks and my clothes were damp with sweat. I must have looked a downright sight, but I didn't care. She fell into the chute, I sobbed, grabbing the edge of his desk for support. From the sixth floor. Everything happened quickly after that. An ambulance was called, as were the police. At first, they were hesitant to tell me what they'd found. They kept insisting I sit down and have some water, throwing leaflets about therapy and mental well-being into my lap. Please, just Just tell me. Just tell me. I kept repeating, but nobody was listening. Hours seemed to pass by without a single word of affirmation or any information needed to piece the events of the morning together. The ambulance left within about 20 minutes of arrival and left the police to take care of it. I couldn't understand it. I mean, even if Monica was badly hurt, she'd still need to be looked at the hospital. So why they left? Eventually, an uneasy-looking officer took a seat next to me. "Son," he began slowly, studying my reaction, "your girlfriend is, well, she's gone." I buried my face in my hands. Of course she was. She jumped down the freaking chute, plummeting God knows how many feet. "But your story isn't quite adding up," he continued, his eyes narrowing. "You said she'd fallen into the chute, but..." He took a deep breath, his forehead creasing. "But we found her. Well, parts of her. Inside a garbage bag." My blood ran cold. It was like I could no longer understand what he was saying. His mouth was moving, but the sounds were jumbled and wouldn't make sense. "Inside a garbage bag? What the hell was that supposed to mean?" He explained that the garbage bag had been there for at least several hours before the police were called. He said that there was no doubt that its contents belonged to Monica. He asked whether I had any idea what happened. Then, in a much softer tone, he added that I'd be expected to come in for questioning. When I finally returned to my apartment that morning, all I wanted to do was fall into bed and go to sleep, praying I'd wake up to discover this had all been nothing but a terrible dream. But as soon as I entered the bedroom, the front door slammed shut. "Hello?" I called out, my voice meek and croaky. Silence. A newfound sense of dread filled my lungs as I recalled the events of the morning. As I tiptoed slowly towards the kitchen, I couldn't help but wondering if... No. It couldn't be. She was leaning over the trash can cabinet, a new garbage bag in her grasp. She spun around and our eyes met. "I'm just going to take out the trash," she said. I stared at her, my breath catching in my throat. Here she was, right in front of me, talking about trash as if it were the most casual thing in the world. In a feeble attempt to make her stay, I asked the only question I could think of. I asked it, even though I knew the answer already. "What's in the bag, honey?"
Oh, man. Ugh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Telling you, those guys ever on no sleep.
And this was from, oh, shoot. I should have gave the info there before I closed out here. That was written by user Genuinely Grim. And I went to check out some more of her stories. Really good writer. She is a really good writer.
Sweet.
But yeah, that one, like, I know it's not, you know, it's not your usual classic, like, campfire story motif that, you know, we've kind of been doing, but there's not, it's not very often that I read a story or an account anymore. I guess, you know, you start doing this after a while and taking in all of this content and all of these different stories, and you kind of become jaded after a while. Like, you know,
yeah.
So when you do read a story or hear somebody give an account and it gives you goosebumps, like it makes the hair stand up on end, like, you just know, I mean, this is good. And the way that was written and just laid out, like, I could picture every bit of that in my head. And I mean, it was just like, oh, could you imagine?
It's crazy.
Like, you would think you were going insane. That's the worst part. Like, you would honestly think you were going insane. I don't know. I just thought that was a good one.
Oh, I forgot to share this with you guys on that one that had a that story that had an update. You know, somebody commented on the update one and put, I can't see if I commented on your previous post, but please play the Hanuman Kalisa song loudly around the house. This song is available on the internet. It is a Hindu prayer designed to repel the supernatural. Keep me updated. So I went and looked that song up. I would just keep the demons because it's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Was it worse than the Indian Thriller?
Yes. Yes, actually. And you know, not dissing any of that, you know, or a whole entire culture. I'm just talking about that particular song.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just horrific.
Well, we just got to keep the demons, I guess, then.
No way. I just
keeping the demons.
I just keep the demons,
man. All right, Mr. Compton.
Your turn.
Okay.
Blow our minds, Producer Lance.
I'll try. I'm afraid it's probably not. It's not definitely not as lengthy as the other stories that I had, but when you inherit a house, this is not from Reddit. So there's that. When you inherit a house, you inherit all the things that include it, including any spirits that may dwell within.
Mm.
When I was growing up, we had one of the best neighbors ever. She was an older lady that I will refer to as Miss Annie. She was one of those grandmotherly types that wore a big hat to church every Sunday and always had something good to cook on the stove. She looked out for our family, and we looked out for hers, as her house was only a block over from ours. We were able to look in on one another often. I mowed her yard every Saturday morning. She always had ready for me a cold grape soda. Miss Annie was a widower, lost her husband back in 1959 due to complications from pneumonia. Apparently, it was a pretty terrible misfortune that befell him. He was bedridden in the house and was under the care of a hospice nurse. Miss Annie had went to a church service while the nurse was watching her husband, and the nurse fell asleep. Miss Annie's husband asphyxiated in his own fluid, unable to call for help. Miss Annie would often tell us how she could still hear her husband at night, clearing his throat, opening closet doors, and making noises in the bedroom when she died. She would say it was very active whenever a woman with long dark hair would enter the house. She felt that his spirit was still angry at the nurse, who also had long dark hair, and was trying to chase him from his home. My mother would joke back she was glad that she had short blonde hair. I can even recall times that I would see things fall off the shelves or hear banging noises in the back of the house, to which Miss Annie would blame her late husband. Dear Miss Annie passed away peacefully in her sleep in the fall of 1984. My mother was very surprised to learn that she had named sole heir to her home due to our late neighbor not having close family or children of her own. My mother was in the rental business, and after a year's worth of renovation, she put the house on the market. Mom couldn't keep a renter in that house. People would complain, slamming doors, noises, doors opening at night, and footsteps, and it seemed that if we had female renters, strange happenings were even worse. We often had renters who would simply just get up and move out in the middle of the night, only to contact us days later with tales of being scratched in their sleep and seeing shadowy forms in the back bedroom.
So that's one of those
things.
Hang on,
I'm not done yet. Hang on.
Oh,
I had to scroll down. Sorry. At one point, my mother rented the house to the parents of some local football legends. And unfortunately, their parents were less than responsible and left the house in the middle of the night, owing months and months of rent. On top of that, they also wrecked the place. We had a long renovation in store for us, and the house sat empty for almost 2 years as we made repairs. When the time and money would allow, it was during the end of the renovation that my encounter with the angry spirit came to be. Back in the day, We had 12 channels to watch on TV, no internet. And if you were super lucky, you had a game system that let you play a mind-numbing 8-bit game. Being bored was an easy thing to come by, so we had to come up with our own entertainment. During one of these bouts of boredom, my friends and I decided to spend the night in the vacant house. My mother allowed me and three of my best friends to camp out in the old house. We quickly made our way, sleeping bags in hand, over to the house. It was completely empty of furniture, except for an old potbelly stove in the living room. No electricity or water, so we had to make preparations to bring snacks, candles, cordwood, board games to keep us entertained. After we set up a suitable camp in the living room, we placed candles all around the room to ensure even lighting and settled in for the night. I think the first strange thing we noticed was how unusually cold it was inside the house. It was late August, but we all felt chilled. So I went out to get some of the wood we had brought to start a fire, and I even remarked to my friends when I returned how much warmer it was outside. Soon, we had a cheery little fire in the stove, and we all felt much better huddling around near the warmth. We noticed, though, shortly after lighting the fire, that the house seemed to get noisy. And by noisy, I mean popping, cracking, creaking, bumping noises coming from the back three bedrooms. Now, being a logical bunch, we attributed this to the heat of the fire causing the cold wooden boards to contract and expand. And while the sounds continued and even grew in volume and regularity, we paid them no heed. As the night wore on, we played many games, ate a bunch of junk food, and imbibed many pops. And since there was no running water, the only choice for bladder relief was to head out the back porch, going redneck style outside. To get to the back porch, you had to navigate through the adjoining kitchen. In the center of the kitchen wall, and in full view of the living room, was a large picture window. The street light from a block down glowed slightly through the window and gave us our only other source of light in the house. And one of my good friends, who I'll refer to as Cobb, felt the pressure of too many pops. So he was forced to head through the dark kitchen to find the back door on his own. And as he did, I took notice of the dim street light shining through the window as he passed. For a brief moment, his form blocked the light as he continued on to the back porch. Many minutes passed. He still hadn't returned. I was laying prone on the floor in my sleeping bag and had a straight shot view into the kitchen and of the window. I occasionally glanced up to check for his return and even pondered out loud as to why it was taking him so long. The creaking of a board drew my attention back to the window. And there, in the dim light, I could see a silhouette. I thought, of course, that it was our friend Cobb returning from the back porch. But the figure just stood there, the body slowly shifting back and forth, and the head craning at angles as if to get a better look into the living room. Now, Cobb was a notorious trickster, and at this point, I can only imagine he was seeking to play a prank on us by sneaking back in. So, without drawing any attention, I whispered a warning to the other two friends in the living room with me. They cast a sideways glance into the kitchen and smiled knowingly. We had foiled the would-be prankster. After several minutes of this, our mood grew impatient. If Cobb was truly trying to scare us, he indeed needed to hurry. The figure made no movements, coming to the living room, just continued to crane and stare. As I was about to call out to the figure when the front door opened, we all jumped in surprise as Cobb walked in. He had walked to the front of the house to bring in more firewood. I spun around in horror. If Cobb was behind us gathering woods, who in the world was in the kitchen? The figure was still standing there, as if the weak light of the street lamp. Slowly it turned and walked away, as if heading not to the back porch, but deeper into the house where the bedrooms were. To say we were rattled is an understatement. We quickly packed up our gear, doused the fire, and headed back down the road to the safety of my house, where we told my mother of the encounter. She scolded us for being silly, and we ended up staying in my room the rest of the night, not daring to sleep for fear that the shadowy figure had followed us. Of course it didn't, and it did not visit me, and I, in return, did not visit it. That is until almost 9 months later, when I had my second and last encounter with this entity. A cousin from Ohio was visiting that summer, and she was around the same age as me and my friend, so she fit in well. Late one night, while she and I were talking on the front porch, I got around to telling her the story of the haunted house. She was instantly intrigued and begged to go see the house for herself. I firmly told her there was no way I was going back into the house, especially not in the middle of the night. She continued to plead and whine till I finally gave in, grabbed a flashlight, and headed on over. I had no intention of going inside. I was going just to take her to the door, let her look in, and come right back out. As we approached the house, though, she grew more and more excited about the prospect of seeing a ghost. By the time we were at the gate of the yard, she was practically bouncing. We made our way to the front porch, and she impatiently grabbed for the handle of the glass storm door and opened it. Cupping her hand over her eyes, she peered into the single window of the old wooden door and complained about not being able to see inside, and not even the flashlight would satisfy her curiosity. She was dying to go in. I told her I wasn't going, and furthermore, I didn't have a key. So on impulse, she grabbed the door, and with no effort at all, it swung open. My mother must have left it unlocked, but that was highly unusual for her. Before I could comment, she was bouncing inside with the only flashlight, and I stood there watching the storm door shut slowly behind her. I called her from the front porch. When she did not answer, I retreated to the gate as the fear of my previous encounter in the house took hold of me and called out again and again. She promptly ignored me. Through the shut storm door, I could make out the ray of the flashlight whipping around in the darkness as she scanned the house over and over. I watched as the light receded into the back rooms of the house. I shouted at her again, panic overtaking me as I watched her venture deep into the house. I then recalled the words of Miss Annie about how her husband did not like women in the house, especially those with long brown hair. And my cousin had long, dark brown curls through her shoulders. I desperately pleaded with her to come out, and several minutes passed before I could see the beam of the flashlight return to the front door. Relief washed over me as I saw her standing behind the glass door. The warm glow of the flashlight in her hand illuminated the doorway, and she reached out for the handle of the outer door, when suddenly she stopped, swung the light around, and in the blink of an eye came crashing through the storm glass door. Lights danced in the living room as the flashlight spun wildly. I rushed to help her. I was pushed, was all she could say. I tried to examine her in the darkness of the porch, but could make nothing out in the gloom. I felt blood on my hands, started to get up and retrieve the flashlight when I saw it. As the flashlight lay in the center of the room, it cast its beam on the far wall. There against the wall was a shadowy figure, just visible in the glow of the light, a shadow of a man. But there was no man standing in the light to cause it. Gathering her up out of the broken glass, we flew back home, leaving the front door open and the flashlight laying in the house. And when we were safely back into our room, I gathered band-aids and peroxide for her cuts. Luckily, her injuries were superficial, nothing more than a small cut on her knee and elbow. As I worked on her injuries, I asked her what had happened. She told me that she'd went into each room in the house and found nothing. As she went into the last of the three bedrooms, she had a very uneasy feeling come over her, so she quickly made her way to the front door. When she went to exit, she could have sworn she heard a congested, wheezing cough come from behind her. As she turned to see what it was, she flew through the glass door as if she'd been pushed. Now, nobody believed her story. My uncle, her father, was furious that my mother was even more so. I was grounded for a month, despite my cousin swearing over and over that I had nothing to do with her accident that marked the last time that I was to go near the house. After that, renters came and went. Some would tell stories of hearing noises in the night, and some would not. And it was apparent that the activity had died down somewhat after my last encounter. It is currently occupied by a local man and his two young sons. They've been there for many years now, never reported anything out of the ordinary with the house. Now, could they just be ignoring the ghost? Or could it be that the ghost finds them acceptable and chooses not to reveal itself? Perhaps the angry spirit felt vindicated by forcing my cousin out of its home that fateful night. Spirits still haunt this house at all? Only time will tell. But for the record, I'm not going to be the one to find out. Now, the location of this house, I have an address. Should we give it to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
300 West 2nd.
Wait a minute. Wait. We could be seen in like, this place isn't occupied.
It says it's still occupied. This story was written in 2012. So it's been 10 years.
I don't know. We might not want to see it in like
I think it'd be okay.
Okay, but residents of this house, if you have hundreds of people show up wanting to investigate your place, blame it on producer Lance.
Let me give you, I think you'll be interested in the location of this place.
Okay.
It's 300 West 2nd Street, Big Stone Gap, Virginia.
What?
It's actually called, let me get back to where this is. It's actually called Miss Annie's House, and it's directly across from June Tolliver's house, which is also a local known in Big Stone Gap. It's also a local known haunted house. It's got moving paintings and moving figures in front of the window. There is actually a picture of June Tolliver's ghost that circulated in the post several years ago, described as a lady in white who carries a thin lit candle through the house. Also on this page is the old Wise County Orphanage, which is less than a half a mile from where I live. There are giggling children, bouncing balls, floating orbs. It is super haunted. Every time they try to tear it down, the equipment quits. That's just like half a mile from the house. The Miss Annie's house is right not far from the Southwest Virginia Museum in Big Stone Gap, where there's reports of a ghost of a handyman and maid are reported at night. And also some train crossings, some headless ghosts and an old long coat down across the railroad tracks in Big Stone. I'm on a local area ghost thing. It's just different stories the people have written. We've got one here from Uva Wise. About Bowers and Sturgill Hall. Probably don't know if you know that story or not, but apparently somebody hung herself there. Sometimes they see it. But Miss Annie's house there is, I knew that story. I've heard that story before. Not to that detail, but I was aware of that story and I have been looking for it and finally found it.
Wow.
There's actually a picture, as you can see of the house. I don't know if I can. Wow. Anyways, I'll send it to you, boys.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, looks like we're going to Big Stone Gap.
There's just within probably a 2 mile radius, several reports of like hauntings.
Now, Lance, did you
don't know either? Big Stone Gap's kind of a sleepy little town. It's like it is what you would call the perfect Halloween town.
Oh, yeah.
Like this time of year, if the leaves changing and all the Halloween decor up, and it's just like what you would, if you wanted to go shoot a movie of a Halloween movie, like it's the perfect town for it.
Well, that's the thing. Like driving down like the actual, you know, neighborhoods of Big Stone Gap. It's funny that you said that because after the Ridgeview Union football game last year, we were walking back to our vehicle. We had to park like blocks and blocks and blocks away. I mean, it was packed out. You know, they still play right there at Bullet Park. So, you know, it's not really a whole lot of parking. So we were walking back through there. And as we were walking and kind of, you know, walking that sidewalk in front of all these people's houses and stuff, I actually made the comment like, this looks just like the set of Halloween.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Why can't I think of the name of the town in Halloween?
Arkstill. No.
No.
Ellie was just watching it this afternoon, was it?
Oh, my God. Haddonfield.
Yeah.
Good Lord. That was going to make me look real stupid. But that's what I told Connor. I was like, I feel like we're in Haddonfield right now. Like this, but you're right. You're totally right. It would be the perfect set for a Halloween style movie set. And actually, there has been a movie. Y'all can check it out. It's called Big Stone Gap, based on the book by what's that chick's name?
Adriana. Oh, I can see her face. I can't think of it.
She has a name. Some lady that has a name. It's a pretty good book, though. Pretty good movie. Y'all check it out. Sounds to me like Big Stone's got a lot of haints and ghosties running around, though. Adriana Trigiani. What was it?
Adriana Trigiani.
That's it.
It was something like that.
That's it. Now, Lance, did you say that your wife has some stories about the orphanage and wise?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
When she was younger, she would, so her mom and dad divorced at a young age. So she would obviously spend, you know, certain days with dad, certain days with mom, whatever. But one of the things that she would make her dad do on one of the weekends or evenings, whatever she was with him, that she would, every time that she would make him drive up by the orphanage and just pull in. It's grown up a lot more now than it was then. They used to kind of keep it kind of cut down and stuff. They don't anymore. I think they're trying to let it dilapidate and tear itself down because they can't tear it down. But she would make him drive by and just see it. And she has all kinds of stories about people who had used to go up. Now, if you get caught up there now, like they go in jail. But for a long time, they did not. She has tons of stories of people who've been up there investigating, have gone up there with flashlights and had like just put batteries in and get up there and the flashlight just quit. People with cameras trying to video stuff. And as soon as they step into the orphanage, this camera just drained of batteries. They were trying to tear it down. The electric screwdrivers and their battery powered screwdrivers and battery powered tools, power tools they had, they would drain out in no time. Dozers wouldn't start. Like there's a ton of stories up there. They would hear kids giggling, see balls rolling around. She can come and give a pretty good diatribe on all the stuff going on at the orphanage. And you can drive by it right now. You can't see it as well. You'd be able to hear in a couple of weeks once things kind of die down. But like you just look up there and it kind of looks like an old falling down building now. But I've seen pictures when it was kind of still, they're still maintaining the grass stuff around it. It just looks like one of them creepy places.
Yeah. Well, Monica works with a lady that has a lot of stories about the orphanage too. And some time spent there. Not spent, you know, in the orphanage, like as an orphan, but sneaking in as a teenager or whatever and checking the place out and some weird stuff going on then. So we may have to do an episode on this orphanage in the future and you get all the info from Hay that you can get. And I'll talk to this lady that Monica works with.
I'll try to ride out there too once we do that, and I'll try to at least get some pictures of the place.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. That would be sweet. All right, boys. Well, I think that about wraps up our second edition of Super Scary Creepy Story Time.
Didn't Lance have another story?
Oh, I don't know.
Did I?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Ryan, you just keep wanting more. You just keep wanting more.
I know I'm a pretty good storyteller, Ryan, but come on.
You really are a good storyteller. Like I get sucked in whenever you're telling a story.
I've got a wood booger story, but we'll hang on to that one for another day.
Yeah, let's save that for another Bigfoot episode. We ain't talked about the big guy in a while. We need to.
And there's plenty of stuff about the N and Y's here too. I could probably talk about, but that's for another day.
For another day.
There's haunted. You can actually like stay in a couple of the haunted rooms in the N and Y's.
Sweet, let's do it. One king bed. That's all I want.
King.
Me.
We don't want
you. No. What was I thinking?
Give me that full sized in man.
All right, boys. Well, I think that was pretty creepy. I've got to say, this tonight for me, I don't know why. I have no idea why. I don't know if it was just the taking in all the stories before we actually sat down to record. I don't know what it's been, but I have been super creeped out like all evening, man. Super creeped out. I don't know what's going on. And then y'all telling these stories, I've been like looking around, hearing all these, freaking out, man. Ugh, I don't know. But anyway, Hill Folk, I hope this has creeped you out as well. This is our second and final Halloween edition of Super Scary Creepy Story Time. Next week, we'll be bringing a twist to a well-known story that we may have actually briefly mentioned on this episode. So we're throwing out hints.
That was sci-fi. That was Hitchcock. Sorry.
Yeah, that was Hitchcock. You're off there. It's not about Alfred Hitchcock.
No birds.
Well, oh, I don't know. We may be getting into some birds.
I actually had a story from Beckley called The Witch of the Wildwood that had about four or five references to our friend Lilith, but I couldn't find the second part of it. So that's why I think that's the other story you were talking about, Ryan. I couldn't find enough like to branch all the pieces together. There's a local legend of the 1900s there of actually a gentleman that moved in, worked in a coal camp there from Lithuania, that was just doing some strange things that the people, local people thought. Actually, on Halloween night, actually hung him and claimed he was doing witchcraft. And it's called The Witch of the Wildwood. I couldn't find enough. Like, there's a ton of like fictional stories of The Witch of the Wildwood. Like, people have used that statement to write their own stories, but the actual lore behind it, I couldn't get the second part of it. I couldn't find enough of it to be able to really close a whole story together, but some interesting stuff there too. Speaking of birds, speaking of creepy birds and Lilith and all those things.
Well, you're definitely going to have to find that
as I was searching stuff, I was like, that looks interesting. Once I spent some more time looking it up, I'll be able to find some stuff.
Well, I am intrigued.
Yeah. Dang it.
We had we've got a message about, well, I'll tell you boys about it afterwards. I'd like to bring him on the show eventually if he is willing to come on, because I know he has other accounts and experiences, but this one in particular, it's nutso, dude. But anyway, Hill Folk, we hope you enjoyed this latest installment of Appalachian Intelligence. Again, we are super thankful for you guys listening and sharing the show. We continue to grow for that. We're super grateful. Please follow us on all socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Subscribe to our YouTube.
That thing's almost at 250, boys.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Growing, son. Growing.
500 subs, we'll do a giveaway. Don't know what that will be yet, but I'm putting that out there. 500 subs, we're doing a giveaway.
Yeah,
that's good. We'll blast that on the socials too. 1,000 subs, Lance will get that T-shirt tattooed on his body.
Absolutely.
We'll just stitch it straight to him.
But no, subscribe to our YouTube so we can send out a giveaway out of that 500. Please remember to rate and review this show wherever you listen to podcasts, or only on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, because they're the only ones got the crap together that allows you to really leave a decent review.
Come on, Spotify.
Come on, Spotify. Really?
Lock it up. Get it together.
Killing us. Killing us. We have more ratings on Spotify than anywhere else, but we can't get a review. God, killing me. And more than anything, share the show. You guys keep sharing the show. That's what allows us to grow. That's what allows us to be able to do more, to have merch, to have more time. I done a little Instagram live before we jumped on here and started recording, just kind of a little trial run, playing around with it. But I did leak a little bit of info on there. We have been waiting and waiting and waiting and putting off starting a Patreon because mainly of the fact that the three of us work full-time jobs. We all have big families. We all have a lot of things going on throughout the week. We don't have a lot of time. You know, if we're able to record twice in one week, we're doing really good. So to get bonus content and, you know, all this stuff out there, it's really a chore for us. But I love to write. Ryan loves to write. Lance, if he doesn't love to write, he's going to learn to. We are working on a couple different writing projects. I won't put a title on anything. I won't classify it under any kind of thing because it's different. It's going to be a whole different thing. But when we get some of that in place and comfortable to the point that we're ready to drop quite a bit at one time, we'll start up the Patreon, and that's what we'll put on there. So just throwing out a little teaser for that. Just for instance, I'm working on a project right now. I don't really know how it's going to end up. I know that I've started the writing process on it, and I have the first two chapters completed. And it's called, I'll just tell you what it's called. Shoot, I'll throw the info out there. It's going to be called The House at the Top of the Holler. And again, I don't want to put any kind of classifications on it. You guys know what we enjoy. You know what we talk about. You know where we operate. It's weird. It's weird. And it brings in a lot of the things that we talk about on here, but it's also based loosely on how I grew up, where I grew up, some of the people that I grew up around. So it's like that little thing before the movie, based on true events. It may steer well away from that, but there's a basis. That just makes the writing process a little easier, a little more personal. So I'm excited about that. You guys get excited about that. I may drop a little teaser, maybe the first chapter, within the next couple weeks, just to say, hey, we're getting ready to open this thing up on Patreon. So y'all just be looking for that, be looking for it. And, we hope that you come over, check it out, and we hope you love it. We hope you love it because it's already been a lot of fun.
I'm not going to write anything, but I'm going to start an OnlyFans with my feet. So it's just kind of helps. It'll be Appalachian Intelligence, OnlyFans. And it will start out as pictures of my feet and eventually get the pictures of Ryan's bald head. So you're welcome, world.
That's right.
I've seen those hobbit feet. There has got to be a select class of people out there. You're just going to have to find your niche here. You're going to have to find your niche. All right, Hill folk, we'll jump off here. Happy Halloween season. Happy Halloween coming up in a couple of weeks. We hope that you guys are diving into all the spooky that you can be diving into. Go check out those haunted attractions. Watch the scary movies. Take it all in. Get spooky.
And they're already pushing Christmas commercials on us. Keep the spirit up.
Keep the Halloween spirit alive for a little while. Okay. It's not Christmas time yet. It's not Christmas.
No.
Hill folk, we love you.
Love you and mean it.
We appreciate you. And until next time, we'll see y'all later.